Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Sentimental Garbage, the podcast where we talk about the chiclet that made us who we are. My name is Caroline O'Donoghue and I'm an author, a journalist and an heir to a Taiwanese plastics fortune. Joining me is Wei Ming Kam, a writer, publishing maven and the first person to ever pair a vintage Yves Saint Laurent smoking jacket with $3 boutique shorts.
Today we're my dreams.
So fashionable, so elegant. Today we're talking about Kevin Kwan's Crazy Rich Asians. So, Ming, we've never met before today, but we've been tweeting each other about this book and also the film for over a year.
On and off, and I think we will continue to do so until the last film is released. They are filming the last two films in a row next year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Like, and then clearly Kevin Kwan's going to come up with something else. And so basically, until Kevin Kwan is dead, we will be linked.
About this ridiculous book.
What's your relationship to these books? What makes them so addictive and compelling? What's your history with them?
They are just so over the top. I first encountered them, let me see, I think it was 2011. I was kind of like on the first year of what I thought was going to be my only gap year, and then it sort of turned out it was going to be four. But I was in Singapore airport, I think, probably on my way to see family. My family are from Malaysia originally, and I have some like family in Singapore as well. So I was in Singapore Changi Airport, and I was just wandering around, and obviously I came upon the bookshop, and I was like, well, I have to go in. And there was this massive wall of Crazy Rich Asians.
Wow.
And it was a really nice cover as well. It was like hot pink with gold glittery lettering, and I was like, what on earth is this? This looks just like ridiculous fun. So I picked it up, read the blurb, and I was like, okay, cool. And then I like read it on the plane home, and I was like, this is hilarious, like actually hilarious. I kind of recognize like bits of you know, the culture that they describe in terms of, you know, my family from Malaysia and Singapore. I sort of go back every couple of years, but you know, the rest of it, the fact that they are all incredibly rich and snobby and awful people. I was just like, obviously this is like nothing that I've ever encountered before. So I kind of, it kind of struck me how it was kind of like a posh rich, like English trashy book, but like set in Singapore and Hong Kong and places that I kind of recognise, and I loved that. I really enjoyed that.
That must have been incredible, especially in Singapore airport as well. Like, you're literally clipping it right off the vine. Getting that fruit fresh from the source. I'm going to have a quick plot summary, although I would hope everyone would know the plot by now. But yeah, let me get into it. So Rachel Chu is an economics professor and Chinese-American who is visiting her boyfriend Nick Young's family in Singapore for the wedding of his best friend, Colin Koo. Little does Rachel know that Nick belongs to the most elite and most private family in Singapore, and that Nick is the de facto heir to that fortune. Rachel sort of spends the summer being terrorized and intimidated by this intense web of Singapore millionaires, and then she accidentally learns some home truths in the process. But the thing that, like, the opening of this book is like one of the strongest introductions, I think, because we have this very, very powerful scene where these kids, it's set in the late 80s, and we have all the main players, which is Nick Young, his cousin Astrid, their other cousin Eddie, and their parents.
I forget it's Eddie as well.
Eddie's there!
Awful even as a child.
Awful even as a child. And they're in, they're soaking wet in London in 1986, and they have this reservation at this very elite hotel, and the concierge doesn't believe they have the reservation, or he does believe it, but he thinks that because these Chinese people will like bring down the tone. He's a racist, basically. He's a fucking racist. He's a rank racist. And Eleanor Young, who is the matriarch of this family, responds, by buying the hotel and kicking him out.
Yeah, and the film as well, like, basically replicates that entire scene, almost verbatim. And I kind of, like, I think my initial reaction to that scene, both when reading it and then watching it in the cinema last year, was very similar in that I absolutely loved it. It's very satisfying. But then, you know, you take a few minutes to, like, move on to, like, the next chapter or the next, like, bit of the film, and you're like, well, I mean, that's nice and everything, but, like, money doesn't solve racism. And also, yeah. What happens to those who don't have money?
Yeah, people who can't buy their way out of racism.
Yeah.
And there's also, I think it's a really important scene. And I think it's why, like, as like, trashy and fun and glitzy as this book is, it's also, like, to me, it's, like, more than the sum of its parts or something.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's, like, Eleanor Young identifies, and that whole generation identifies so much with that sort of British colonial taste thing. And all the things they love and appreciate come from that stem. And, like, here she is being rejected by this culture that she sees herself as being
and
a part
yet,
of.
And yet, they never reject it. Because, like, all of that money and that that history from colonialism means that, you know, they're still taken in by, you know, the white upper class in Britain and elsewhere. Yeah. Which is so awful. I think that's, like, that's probably one of the main things, besides, let's move on. But, like, that's one of the main things that I really don't like about this book, like, this whole series, is that, obviously, Kevin Kwan has been very open about the fact that he is a part of this world. He went to an elite boarding school in Singapore. Like, he has many friends amongst, like, this rich set of people. And you can tell that the books are trying to, like, be satirical, but not very hard. Like, he's too much, you know, there's so much description of everything, all of the, you know, the brand names and, like, the food, which is the food description is fine. That's just part of, like, culture generally. Yeah. But there's so much description of everything, and it's so, like, luxuriated upon. And you can tell he's still, like, he's in love with it too, obviously.
That's so interesting. There's such a struggle there, though. I think that's so interesting because he's, like, he obviously is, like, very biting about the people who he sees as being, like, disgustingly wealthy and treating it terribly.
Yeah.
But he also has a lot of prestige for wealth itself when wealth is used what he thinks as properly.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, we're all in love with Astrid Leong, and he's in love with her too, you know?
Oh my god, she's my wife.
And okay, so explain to me who Astrid
my wife.
Is. Yeah, my wife, my beautiful wife. Don't you dare speak to my wife.
Oh my god. Oh, yeah, so I was telling, like, Carolyn before, like, this started, that I was texting one of my friends before this, and, like, we talked about Astrid, and immediately both of us were just like, my wife. And I just think, like, nearly everyone who reads this book or watches the film.
Oh, yeah.
Gemma Chan.
Gemma Chan.
Just call me.
She's just made of smoke and silk.
She's
That's
incredible.
Just like, she's not a real person.
But everyone loves her. And I
so
think
tell me, like, give me a description, like, who she is.
So she's, like, Nick Young, one of the main characters' cousin. And they're both, like, very close because even though they're both, like, heirs to these obscenely, like, rich fortunes, they kind of stand out a bit because, unlike nearly everyone else around them, like, they're very confident because of their wealth. But apart from that, I kind of feel like they kind of stand out because they're kind of almost embarrassed by it.
Yeah.
You know, they don't feel like they need all of the money to be satisfied with life. But of course, it's very easy for them to say so because they've always had it.
Mm.
And they can afford, you know, Nick can afford, because of his wealth, to be happy with his, you know, teaching career as a history professor in New York City. And she can afford to just, like, fly around being some sort of, like, patron to, you know, these new up and coming, like, fashion designers.
But yeah,
so
it's
on.
Only the very wealthy who can afford to say things like, money doesn't matter to me.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. But they kind of stand out just because they aren't. And this is what's interesting about, I think, Kevin's, like, attitude towards certain characters. He clearly, like, really loves Astrid as a character. Mm. And slightly to a lesser extent, Nikki and Rachel and Colin Araminta. Mm-hmm. But I think it's because, like, they're not, like, what you would call vulgar about their wealth. And, you know, they have good taste and, you know, they like their arty, like, but in a genuine way, they love their, like, art and history and English and so on. And, you know, Astrid loves doing, like, charity work. How very generous of her, etc.
But it's, like, one of these things, but it's, like, Astrid spends as much as anybody else, but the thing is, like, he differentiates it with, like,
she's classy.
It's like it's things of true beauty. Like, she is a connoisseur of the beautiful. It's like, that's why she'll wear, like, a linen dress from Mango with, like, these obscene, like, diamond earrings, you know?
And yeah. Oh my god, I always remember that scene from, like, book two where Colette Bing, who's that ridiculous Chinese, like, fashion blogger, but also a billionaire, is just like, oh my god, where did you get that dress from Zara? And she notices all of these, like, high-end fashion other accessories, like the boots that Ashley is wearing, and these, like, bracelets, which are actually fucking antiques.
They're literally from, like, a dynasty that no longer exists.
Yeah, like the Etruscans in Italy from, like, AD 650. And then she asks about, like, the dress that Astrid is wearing, and she's like, oh, I bought it from Zara the other day. And that's, I think, the thing is, though, like, I can't help but love Astrid, and I think nearly everyone can't help it, because Kevin has so written her to be so likeable.
Oh, totally.
So likeable and so, like, sympathetic.
And also there's, like, a kind of a beautiful serenity about her character. Like,
I mean, he gives her the nickname the goddess.
Oh, and, like, what I love about her as well is that the way she's introduced to us is that she's in Paris because she goes every year to get her couture fittings. Like, she's so aspirational. And as someone, we see her through the eyes of, like, some white Western Europeans who are at this fashion show.
Yeah.
And someone says, like, oh, whose mistress is she? And someone's like, she is a double heiress. She's the richest woman in Asia. Like, and then, like, suddenly everyone's attitude towards her changes.
Because she's got money.
Yeah.
See, that's the thing about these books. I love them. They are so ridiculous. And we know that we're supposed to, like, hate most of these people. They are terrible.
Having that much money is immoral. Like, it is. It just is.
Oh, yeah. No, like, my personal, like, attitude towards these people in real life is eat the fucking rich. But it's just enjoyable because, like, none of us will ever, like, get that much money. So it's just like, oh, this is an insight into something that we will never encounter. Like, who actually knows about, you know, the best naval architects for a yacht or whatever? None of us know about any of this, but we get, like, an insight into it.
That's why it's so brilliant, because you get this, like, trashy, vulgar, like, oh, diamonds, 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 cars, cars, cars. But then at the same time, you're learning about the history of, like, Singapore and, like, how, like, the different shifts of wealth within Asia itself. And, like, you learn not just about Singapore, but, like, you learn about, like, you know, Hong Kong and, like, the way mainland Chinese people are perceived by Singapore people as well. And it's just, it's incredibly, like, deep. Like, there's a lot of layers there.
Obviously, I don't recommend these books for, like, a history guide to, like, Southeast Asia and East Asia. I mean, that's all very guided by, like, Kevin Kwan's viewpoint as well. But it is interesting. Like, I'm sure loads of people will go off and research it, but obviously not to an extent that I would like them to. But, like, you're not supposed to, you know, you're supposed to, like, enjoy these books and be like, oh yeah, Singapore and Hong Kong and China, and I guess maybe I'll go on holiday there. It's like, well.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like, a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at UH1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Yeah. I suppose.
What's interesting as well is like the battle between the younger and the older generations in this book. Because like you've got like Eleanor Young, I said this matriarch, and she like hates, she will spend like millions on jewels but won't pay for a taxi. And really resents sort of spending money on kind of small things like that, like paying for long distance phone calls.
Yeah.
And like you've got this sort of upper generation of these old money people, Singaporeans, and then their children, because they're all part of this like booming huge class of people who are getting money very, very quickly. They're all living this incredibly extravagant lifestyle. So it's like a clash of like extravagance versus like what's the opposite of extravagance but still wealthy. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I found that interesting as well, but I think it's basically just like Kevin picking up on I think a certain amount of hang-ups and like no small amount of like trauma from like living through like colonial era events, and also maybe if they're like old enough, like world wars as well. I mean, again, these are still extremely rich people, but I think throughout the series we start learning that a lot of the older generation, like, you know, lived through World War II and then like independence and so on and so forth. So they I think in book three, which I haven't quite finished yet, but you know, we learn that like some of the older generation basically like worked for the British or something, and like were like basically part of like the anti-Japanese resistance and so on. It's really like weird, because it's nice to see some of like that history in a book like this, but also it's like, you know, it's not a history lesson. It's kind of like almost immediately like glossed over as part of like this like family drama, etc., etc. But I guess it's still like, it was still kind of cool to see that for me, that kind of that older generation, like, you know, that trauma sort of acknowledged. But you know, there's some habits there that people will never throw off. But at the same time, these are really rich people. Like,
I can keep going back to.
Yeah, like, yeah. I can't really believe in that very much. But, you know.
Yeah, it's like, I guess they're entitled to their own trauma.
I guess. I mean, this is the thing, though. There's so much in all of these books. Like, there's mental health issues, like, everywhere.
That's interesting. The mental health thing. So, Colin Koo, who is, like, this playboy best friend of Nick Young, who's getting married to Araminta, who's this it girl.
I think he's
model.
Like the loveliest guy in the trilogy.
Very sweet person, but also suffers from depression.
Yeah.
And it's kind of sewn through his character. It doesn't come up a lot, but it's sort of very much part of his experience kind of thing. What do you think that was intended for, you know?
Well, I guess like the idea that wealth fucks you up, like massive wealth fucks you up. To a certain extent, and then that gets kind of carried through book two, and then I think it also like book three as well, with like the books have been out for ages now. I don't care about spoilers. Like Rachel's brother Carlton, and then also Charlie Woo's like wife Isabel. There's a lot of like, not that obviously like massive wealth like causes mental illness or whatever, but I think a lot of like there's that. Kevin basically just like intimates that it exacerbates that, you know, like all this pressure and this expectation to like inherit these businesses and so on from their parents and families.
And also the sense of like, because, and this is like why these novels kind of remind me so much of like Regency era or Jane Austen novels, because these people are too rich to work, they have no jobs but to maintain their own social order.
Yes.
So the magnifying glass on all these characters by each other is so like so enhanced all the time. They're always being watched, and like it feels suffocating, you know.
I think it was it's just like, it's also an attempt by like Kevin, I think, to talk about mental health in a culture where by and large mental health still isn't really like acknowledged very much or talked about at all. It's kind of seen as like, it's not really seen as something to be like, especially with the older generation, isn't seen as like something that you don't acknowledge or that it's not real. Obviously, like, that's a massive generalization, but, you know, you don't go to a doctor for, like, something that's just in your head, so to speak. So it was... I like that he, like, dealt with those issues. But again, it's more a kind of a... He's mostly sympathetic to people with, like, mental health issues in these books. But then, you know, especially for Isabel and Carlton, their mental health issues are kind of, like, a way of, like, either causing family drama or they're a part of
it.
That's another thing that I kind of like go back and forth on, you know. But obviously these books, again, aren't like a shining example of like perfect writing about mental health.
It's so interesting because like, because you are like obviously a fan of these books and you've read them inside out and like, but you're very critical of them at the same time. You've got quite a love-hate relationship.
Yeah, definitely I have a love-hate relationship. And I think even more so with the film, but we'll talk about that later. They're just really enjoyable.
What itch do you think they scratch in your literary brain?
Just entertainment, basically.
Just pure entertainment.
Entertainment, and also he writes about food kind of nicely. So if I'm just like,
I love that scene where they go to the hawker's market.
Yeah.
And
although I have to say, a lot of the Singaporean and the Malaysian diaspora were just like, why do they go to that particular marketplace for satay? Like, that food thing goes like through every like layer of Singaporean and Malaysian like culture. Yeah. Like, food is so important, and everyone's always just like, okay, where do we go, Macan? Where do we go eat? You know, and it's always like, what do you want to eat? Well, where's the best place for it then? And it's like half an hour of discussion. Like, no joke. That bit is like a real thing. So it's just really funny because like I really loved that scene. It was nice. I was just like,
I should say for the listeners, the scene we're talking about is basically Rachel and Nick step off the plane and they're immediately met by
Colin
and Araminta, and like, which is funny because Araminta looks like a teenager. She's wearing pajamas. We find out later that she's glasses. A model and glasses, and they just like go to an outdoor market, like drink beers, eat food, and like it's so just true. Really sumptuous or something. Like, it's just gorgeous.
I think I just like start a war here, but like Malaysian food is the best. Malaysia and Singapore have this real like rivalry, and like it really like boils down to like the food stuff as well. That whole like there were people just being like, why would they go to this place for like the best satay? Like, that's not the
that's best so place funny
it's, really, it's just hilarious.
Yeah, because it's like in the book there's this huge argument about like where the best satay in the satay is, and the fact that like people who are reading it being like, fuck this is not where the best satay is from.
Yeah, I did really enjoy that. It's I think that's the other thing that I enjoyed about books. There was just, like, there were little bits of, like, the culture that I sort of grew up in there. And it was just nice to see that. You know, like, Malaysia, Singapore, like, real melting pots of culture, although obviously they do have, like, racial and class issues. Mm-hmm. We're not going to go into that now.
Did you grow up in Malaysia? Like, what's your timeline?
No, so I was born in England, but both my parents come from Malaysia, and, like, we go back every couple of years. Okay. And then my uncle and his family are in Singapore. It was just... And then, like, I've got some cousins in England as well. But yeah, it's just like there are still bits of the like of that particular culture that you do recognize, and it's just nice. Like, all of the like the Singlish, or in Malaysia it would be Manglish, and like
the sort of like the kind of sort of a form of patois kind of thing.
No, I wouldn't call it patois, but it's basically like, you know, English, but there are bits of like loads of dialect in there, so like Bahasa Malay and Hokkien, Cantonese, Mandarin, etc., thrown in that people like use every day. So it's just, it was nice to see that. I enjoyed that a lot. Yeah. I enjoyed all the food a lot. Yeah. It's just entertaining, isn't it? You're just like, oh, in real life, I would hate all of these people. But it's just, you're never going to experience any of this. I looked up, by the way, just like on a whim a few months ago, how much those first class flights from New York to Singapore would be.
How much?
And I think it's similar for like, London to New Zealand because I love New Zealand. And I was like, well, I know Singapore Airlines flies the same like route. So, yeah. And it was like a similar price, but it's like £7,000 per person return. But I also
and what's interesting is like that's like the first time that Rachel who gets a notion that Nick is from money.
Yeah.
And they've been going out for 2 years.
He's just this is the thing that really annoyed me, especially in the film. He just like kept so much from her.
Yeah, how can you be in a relationship with someone that you know virtually nothing about?
Yeah. Okay, let's go digging into like the relationships like
yeah.
so
fully. Yeah, we've talked about the money a lot, like
he's such a boring but solid lead, romance lead. But I think that's like what you need because I think really these books are actually about the families.
Yeah.
But yeah, he doesn't tell her anything. And, you know, in real life you'd be like, this is really weird. Why aren't you telling me anything? Like, are we not serious enough? We've been out for two years. And she said that in the film as well. But I'm still just like, I don't think you're good enough for her.
Yeah, she's awesome. And you're just rich and hot. Which I guess is, you know, two of the main three.
Were you, like, when you read the book, were you actually that invested in them as a couple?
No, I was much more invested in the B storyline, which is Astrid and her husband, Michael?
Yes.
Michael Cho. And, so their situation, it's almost like a mirror of Rachel and Nick. Because the Rachel and Nick situation, it's very like it's very the prince and me. It's very like, like, oh, I'm just a normal girl. I've been catapulted into this world. And like, what do I do? What do I do? Whereas the flip side of that, the other side of the mirror is Astrid and her husband. And Astrid, like Nick, is very, very wealthy, but has fallen in love with someone who kind of comes from not a very esteemed background. And they've been married.
I mean, he's all right, though. Like, it's very much stressed that he's middle class.
Yeah, no, he's very much a middle class, yeah. And, like, then I think it's established they've been married for, like, 5 or 6 years at the time of the book's opening. But this guy has been in this family for 5 or 6 years, and he's, like, works in a tech startup. He has a tech startup.
Yeah.
And, like, every time he goes to, like, a family dinner, it's like, hey, can you fix a DVD player? You're a tech guy, right? And, like, everyone, all the men in her family find a way to sort of, like just dump on him and sort of make him feel emasculated. Yeah. Which is so interesting about how sort of, like, marrying into a different class or a different culture or whatever is a very gendered experience, I think.
Mm.
I think men and women experience it very differently because, like, they think...
Rachel experiences it so differently, doesn't she?
Because they think that Rachel is a gold digger and they think that Michael is just, like, not a man because he doesn't earn as much as his own wife.
I don't know, though. Like, there's definitely a flashback scene where... either Michael or Astrid, like, recalls that her brothers and maybe, like, an uncle or two basically go grill Michael. Like, from when she's just like, no, we're definitely getting married. You know, you stopped me from marrying, like, my first, like, boyfriend, Charlie Wu, said this is going to happen. And then in this flashback scene that either she or he remembers, like, Astrid's, male relatives go and, like, grill him. And, like, they basically send private investigators to make sure that he's not, like, a gold digger.
Yes, and they present him with, like, a contract being, like, you're going to sign this prenup and it means that, like, you get nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a similar... like, they attribute the same motivation to both Michael and Rachel. But obviously they get treated very differently. Like, Rachel basically... gets horribly treated by all of these women,
mm-hmm.
And like frozen out socially, and then like her background is also investigated by like Eleanor as well, like Nick's mum. But then the way that she gets treated by like almost every like woman of her age in that social circle, apart from Araminta and Astrid.
And there's like an Australian cousin in there somewhere as well who sent her.
Yeah, I really wanted to see her more. No, she was Colin's sister, like younger sister. She gets packed off. We don't see her in the film at all.
We should say the first time that she kind of interacts with these people who like on the surface are being quite sound to her, but then quickly it's like boom, you're out, no way. Araminta's hen do.
On this private island.
I say hen do very broadly. Like, her hen do is on a private resort island that her mother owns that, like, is just crazy. Like they're all... there's a boutique and they're all allowed free clothes from it. And it's just... she's completely out of her depth. And she's like, wow, this is a bit mental, but I guess I'll just go along with it. And then they basically start, like, hazing her.
Yeah.
That's
really awful, isn't it? Yeah. But yeah, like, so there's... apart from... Araminta Astrid and then Colin's younger sister, who we basically never see again, and who is like an Australian surgeon who actually works for a living and is just like, I went to Australia to escape these crazy people. Mm-hmm. She's like treated so awfully, but like in a social manner by all of these women. And I guess like Michael is too, but it's more a kind of like a condescension, like a real like condescension. It's like, well, I guess you're married because Astrid insisted on it.
Yeah.
Whereas the obviously like the women are sort of seen to be like, oh, Nick's never gonna marry you, and we're gonna make sure of it.
And there's this point where it's like, at first, like, it's all passive-aggressive, it's all, like, overheard conversations, and then at the end of the hen weekend, she finds a gutted fish on her bed.
Yeah.
And it's like a horror movie. I remember, like, because I had an audiobook when I heard it first, and I was, like, seizing up, being like, they're gonna kill her! They're gonna kill Rachel!
Oh, God. It's so awful, isn't it?
Yeah. But I feel like it's the difference of that is, like, obviously, so Michael is condescended to because he's married to an heiress and everyone's like, oh, you're not worth the whatever. But the kind of slight thing with Rachel, it feels like, is like, actually, Nick Young is an eligible bachelor. He belongs to this circle of rarefied women. One of us is going to marry him, it's and you better fuck off.
Yeah.
Like, dude, you will not catch this fish. And that's why there's a fish got it on her. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I think... also, like, Kevin kind of wants us, and then much less so in the later books, he kind of wants us to be sympathetic, especially in the first book, to Michael in a certain way. And I think from a class perspective, I am. And then for, like, fleeting moments in book two, you do kind of feel sorry for him a little bit because he's still very much a, you know, I'm never going to be good enough for you because I'm not from, like, the right bloodline. I'm not, like, someone who's already rich. And Astrid's first boyfriend, Charlie, is also treated like that, even though he's incredibly rich because he's, like, not from, you know, an approved family and, like, the bloodline or whatever. But I think also there's that aspect that of East Asian, like, masculinity, whatever, that Kevin wants you to kind of sympathise a little with... you to sympathise with Michael a little bit. It's this weird...
Yeah, explain that a bit more.
Okay. And it's not that I'm not sympathetic towards this, and it's not that I don't think that this like stereotype is incredibly awful and rooted in sort of like colonial stereotypes or whatever. But there's this real like awful like rooted stereotype of like East and Southeast Asian men being either like effeminate and like basically not masculine and just like not desirable at all, and they're either that and or they are incredibly evil, they're the yellow peril, etc, etc.
Yellow peril, sorry, I've never heard that phrase before.
I mean Fu Manchu, for example.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. So I think because of that, partly because of that, Kevin kind of wants you to feel a little bit sympathetic towards Michael, along with, like, the class aspect of it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Michael feels that he's never going to be good enough for Astrid in terms of class, but because he feels like he can't bring anything to the table except himself, like, Kevin kind of emphasises a little bit that he feels a little bit emasculated, so to speak, which I find really... I find this whole, like, discourse around... so-called emasculation and being seen to be undesirable because East and Southeast Asian men are, you know, because of the white colonial gaze, seen to be effeminate in some way. I find that, especially in the diaspora, very frustrating. Mm. I understand that it's, like, an awful stereotype to live with. You know, I think, like, that stereotype is, like, it's been constructed through white supremacy, because, you know, colonialism means that we want you to feel like you're not equal to us.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously then there's the other aspect of we're going to completely sexualize your women and view them in a really weird way. Mm-hmm. And it's not that I don't sympathize with that or feel like that stereotype is real, because it is. But I just don't think it's, like, the biggest issue that, really? Like, East or Southeast Asian diaspora face today. But that seems to be, like, the main thing that a lot of like the diaspora like media outlets like Nexshock and whatever focus on so much. And it's like,
do you think it's to the expense of other issues?
Yeah. I'm probably going to get more to, again, Twitter trolls coming after me being like, why don't you care about this? It's like, well, you know what? What I actually want, I want East and Southeast Asian men in the diaspora to be seen as like fully rounded human beings. But I don't think that like trying to aspire to some like ridiculous, like white supremacist gaze is the way to do it. Like, you know, you just want to be seen as like hot now by like the white gaze. Like, is that really... That's the highest thing that you want to aspire to. Yeah. You know, look, I appreciate like abs as much as the next person, but
I mean, that film appreciated abs as much as the next person, and I appreciated them.
It was very nice, but I'm also just like, this is not the biggest issue, and the fact that people keep on talking about it, you know, is like fuckability really like the big thing? You know, I want you to be seen as like fully rounded human beings, but if all you want is for people to be like, oh yeah, Asian men are hot, that's the stereotype gotten rid of, I'm bored, man. I'm really bored.
And also like psychologically, does that create like a fear of softness, because it's like, if there's already this pretext?
Yeah, and there's this also this, yeah, there's this like also a cultural thing. And again, I, you know, I understand that this is a generalization, but there's also a cultural thing of like, these cultures are generally by and large like very patriarchal. There's so many issues like within the community, like these sort of communities that we have to deal with, and I'm just it's cool, you know, I enjoy hot East and Southeast Asian men, but yeah. I just don't think that like people aspiring to the white gaze and being like assimilated into that you know, categorization of like desirability is like a good thing to aspire to. So I just don't think, like, I don't think this is like the main issue of the book, but it's definitely there, and it's definitely been talked up in like the issues around the film as well. And I'm tired of that being like, if you're going to lean into this weird you know, representation is really important for like Asian Americans and so on in the, like in the marketing of the film.
Yeah.
I just don't think this is like the biggest issue to be like marketing the film on. Like,
yeah. So yeah, let's talk about the film a little bit. Like, cause you seem to have like, as mixed reviews of the film as you do of the books. And that's interesting.
I enjoyed the film. It's ridiculous. It's very entertaining.
It's just beautifully made as well. Just like so lush and gorgeous, and the colours and the jewellery and the like...
What did you enjoy most about the film?
The emerald.
Oh my god.
Just that, like, did you read the that beautiful jewel.
Yeah. Did you read that interview where Michelle Yeoh was like, oh yeah, that's my actual real ring?
I know. I was like, oh, you better work. That was so amazing. Good. And like, I love Constance Wu. Constance Wu is just like, she can make the most boring line of script so full of energy and life. And like, Julia Roberts. Like, she is like filling that role of like,
I feel like it's kind of a thankless role in some regards.
Yeah.
But yeah, the script, I think, improved characters vastly in some ways. I mean, you know, we are limited to a 2-and-a-bit-hour film.
Yeah.
But then also sort of frustrated me and others, and I won't go into that here. I enjoyed what they did with Eleanor Young. But yeah. I mean, it's Tan Sri Michelle Yeoh. How can you not like her to some respects? But they definitely like retooled the script a lot around her, because she's kind of like almost a parody in the books.
Mm.
Like a parody of like all of those stereotypes about like, ugh, tiger mums and whatever.
Yeah. How do you interpret that? Because I think that is something that like Western culture has really grabbed hold of. Do you know what I mean? We really like, there's a lot of discussion of
no
that.
Thanks, Amy Chua. I kind of like hate it and acknowledge that there's a small grain of truth to it.
Yeah.
No,
it's like, it's a bit like, I mean, it's totally, it's a different thing, but I kind of relate in a sense with like, there's like certain Irish stereotypes that make their way into sort of the mainstream culture that like are both accurate, but they're only accurate because they're incredibly broad, and like people paint them in a very unnuanced way.
Thing.
As the only, yeah. like, as a, like, you know, drunks or being like super emotionally repressed or like all these things that like are true, but also they're true as a result of like, okay, but you know, you're making that joke, but you realize that that's the end product of hundreds of years of colonialism and invasion and like, you know, and it's like I enjoy, like, I don't know if you watch Alan Partridge at all.
No.
But basically, he did an Irish parody the other night on like one of his shows, but it was so detailed and so nuanced, and he had so many tiny mannerisms that were so right. I was like, yes, this is the kind of rinsing I want my culture to get. Like, I don't want like, oh, you're Irish, you came in with like a pig under one arm and a fucking thing of stout under the other. Like, I want like people to take the piss out of me, but I wanted them to do it like in a really detailed and loving way.
Yeah, that's what I felt about like the books, is that Kevin like wants you to hate these people, but he also loves it so much he can't help himself.
Yeah,
because he is a part of that world, and a part of it is the wealth thing, but I think also, you know, because he is Singaporean, like, yeah, it's a lot for me. It's definitely like a love-hate thing with these books. I enjoy them so much, but I'm still just like, every time I think about them, I'm just like, oh my god, but then there's this and then there's this.
Yeah I think you can, like, sort of enjoy them and sort of... I do this a lot, and I think it's why I love sort of mainstream, trashy fiction, chick lit, whatever you want to call it, so much, is that I do take my sort of internet brain away. I just put it in a bin for a while.
I know.
Of, like, seeing the problem, seeing the issue, seeing that... Sometimes I need, for my sanity, to, like, park that.
Yeah, I think this, like... I think I can summarise it as, like, there's a couple of people online who I follow, and I won't name them, who are just, like, I think my attitude towards the film, and it's the same with, like, the books, is that, look, no one's saying that this is, you know, the best film ever to, like, represent or et cetera, et cetera, and no one's saying that, like, wealth is the best thing in the world. It's like an entertaining beach read.
Mm.
Like in kind of like the best and worst ways.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, yeah, okay, that's cool. No one expects these like films to like solve racism.
Yeah,
whatever.
But also nobody says, I mean, people don't say like, oh, Jilly Cooper or whatever, that's all just, it's just rich people bollocks, or like even Jane Austen, it's just rich people trash. It's we accept that from so much of the white Western canon, that like a lot of it is about wealthy people, and we don't, and it's never brought up. And but like the fact that this is right there in the title, it's like Crazy Rich Asians, this is what it is, this is what you're getting.
Yeah, pretty much. What did you like most about the books, actually?
I think I just loved the playfulness of them, and I think what I admired the most is what I admire, and I've made this point a lot on the podcast, which is that you can take a really formulaic story, which in this case is that sort of ordinary girl thrown into a crazy world, and love will have to find a way, right? That is a formula that we know super well. But I think when a formula is like really well known, it gives you enormous space to explore other themes around it.
Yeah.
Because everyone knows what's going to happen next. You don't. You almost don't have to worry about the plot, but you can worry about the nuance and the culture and the story. And like, I think it's just a great, like, yeah. That's what I love about it. I think it's nuance on top of something that everyone knows. Everyone thinks they know the story, you know?
Yeah.
Also, I love Peglin. I love Peglin, and I love Oliver Tien, and I just love the people around the sides that are kind of the workers and the machinations and like...
Yeah, but that's the thing though, I think, but again, that's one of the other things that I enjoyed, is that going in, you know that like, the main couple is good. And obviously there will be obstacles, but it's less about them like falling in love than like getting through the families and all of the other like stuff that comes, the baggage that comes with it.
Yeah.
So like you're kind of secure enough in like in that, and also the formula, to just explore everything else.
Yeah. And like just to go back to Oliver a little bit, because Oliver is one of the only people of the family who sees Rachel struggling and is like, come here, you know, we're gonna fix all this, like, you can get out of that dress from the Gap right now, like, and we will fix this problem that is you. And he's kind of doing it partly because he feels sorry for her, and partly because he sort of wants to get one over on the Youngs a little bit. He's kind of over their whole deal.
Yeah.
And he's kind of, he's never explicitly said to be gay in the books.
It's definitely heavily implied.
Yeah, it's very coded, like, in almost in a kind of old school way. Like, he's kind of very dandy-ish, and he's kind of got this outsider sort of status, and he kind of recognises other
gossipy
outsiders.
Gossipy, and, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, it's made much more explicit in the film, in that, you know, Nico Santos is like, I'm like the rainbow sheep of the family.
Yeah, I love that, though. He was so good in the movie.
He was really great, and I really want to see, like, I really want to see more of him, but, like, he, in the books, he's just not given that much of a storyline.
Yeah,
I really enjoy him and all of sort of the other side players. Now that I sort of go back to it, it's sort of kind of, again, like much of the other, many other things in the books, it kind of frustrates me. Partly because, like, he's, like, a sideline. He's kind of, like, a stereotype in that, you know, he's, like, the flamboyant, heavily coded, like, gay slash queer person in the family. But, I mean, like, you know, queerness is illegal in Malaysia and Singapore.
I only found that out after I read
Singapore,
this book, yeah.
Singapore, it's, like, it's a very lax, like, they don't really enforce it, and it is because they don't want to put off the many, many white expats who work in Singapore and, you know, help drive the economy, and also that they don't want to discourage, you know, the many, many tourists who come there as well. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the colonial law is still there, and recently, especially after the success of Crazy Rich Asians, the film, people, especially high-profile people, started pushing to repeal it again. And ministers were just like, well, we can't impose, you know, a law on, like, the majority because of a minority, etc., etc. We've just got to make sure, like, eventually
what?
The morals will, like, you know, it will they will shift over time. Opinion will shift over time, and that's when we'll, you know, that kind of bullshit, essentially.
What? But like, they're just literally asking to decriminalise. Because, like, as far as I've read, it's same-sex acts are a punishable offence, but a fine of, like, £2,000, the equivalent.
Yeah, it's a similar, I think it's kind of, like, the same, I think it's the same law that just got repealed yet again in India.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, and it's, it's much more heavily enforced in Malaysia, especially since the new government came to power. Yeah, so, but, like, that kind of, like, heavily coded, like, character being sidelined and being kind of, like, a stereotype, that now that I go back to it in the books, it's really frustrating. But also, you know, he's one of, part of, like, the richest families in, like, Singapore and even, like, Southeast Asia and Asia. He'll be fine.
Yeah.
Like, nothing's ever going to happen to him.
Do you think Kevin Kwan could write a book about ordinary working middle class Chinese people?
He's got a contract to write a TV series, and it's going to be yet again about rich people, so I don't think he ever will.
He's not interested in poor people.
I don't think...
And why should he be?
I don't think he ever will. Like, he... it's like fucking Julian Fellowes in Downton Abbey. He's never going to write about poor people, ordinary people.
They're boring. They're boring and ugly.
Yeah, it's like... Kevin went to, like, these boarding schools, and he's, like, he knows all these people in real life.
Yeah, what would he even say, you know? Like, yeah.
I don't know.
Anyway, maybe we should probably wrap up. Is there anything you'd like to promote, or any work that you've got coming out that you'd like to toot about?
Oh, I guess... this is like 2 years old now, but I wrote an essay for The Good Immigrant, which came out in 2016, and mine was about basically the British Chinese, and I guess to a sort of lesser extent, other East and Southeast Asians in Britain, and about how we're classified as kind of like this model, invisible model minority, which is bullshit. And then last year I wrote an essay for Can We All Be Feminists, which was out with Virago.
I have it at home.
Edited by June Eric Godori, and mine's about gender discrimination in the immigration system.
Cool. Great. And you're also very good on Twitter, if you want to...
I don't want Twitter too much. I'm sorry about, like, this is supposed to be, like, a podcast about, like, rom-coms, and I was just like, oh my god, social issues, and all of the no, rich people
this is
are awful.
This is what it is. Like, it's always this. It's always like, yeah, romance, but also, let's talk about gender discrimination.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I've loved having you on. Thank you for having us in this wonderful office.
This has been Sentimental Garbage, and I've been Caroline O'Donoghue. You can follow me on Twitter at Zaroline, that's Czaroline, or email me about the podcast at ZaroLineO'Donoghue@gmail.com. This has been a Justice for Dumb Women podcast. Thanks to Harry Harris for the jingle, Gavin Day for the logo, and Acast for the recording space.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.